I always get super pumped when I have a guest on the show that's former law enforcement that has made the successful transition to the private sector. My next guest is Jared Hardy. He's a 21-year law enforcement veteran, a U.S. Air Force veteran, former college athlete, mixed martial arts competitor, small business owner, and a husband and father of three. It is his passion for coaching individuals to become their best that truly separates his programs from the competition. His course options will leave students mentally recharged with renewed purpose and the physical tools to maintain it long after the course has ended. Next on the CJ Evolution Podcast. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Patrick here, host and creator of the top-ranked Criminal Justice Evolution Podcast. Thanks to you, the listener and supporter. Thank you so much for the support. We have to keep the lights on, too, here at CJ Evolution. If you want to become a Patreon, head over to cjevolution.com. You're going to see a link to this great company. Super pumped to have the next guest on the show, but really, really quick, I want to give a big shout out to all the brave men and women who protect this country every day from the various threats. Keep up the fantastic work. You are all doing a great job. I hope everybody had a fantastic 4th of July. Remember, without our brave men and women fighting for this country, we would not be able to celebrate the 4th of July. So the next time you see a first responder, a brave men and women in uniform, go up, shake their hand, thank them for what they do. Big shout out to our sponsor, Detect-A-Chem. This amazing company is protecting our brave men and women in uniform every day. Mobile threat detection is now available in the palm of your hand. Head over to cjevolution.com. You're going to see a link to Detect-A-Chem. See what this amazing company can do for your organization. Protect the brave men and women who serve us every day. Without further ado, I give you the one, the only, Jared Hardy. Enjoy. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. I am super excited to have my friend right down the road here in Colorado. He's in Fort Collins. I'm in Boulder. Jared Hardy, welcome, sir.
Thank you, Patrick. It's an honor to be here with you, and I'm excited to get on the show.
Well, I appreciate it, man. And we have some mutual friends in common, and I appreciate you being here. And I ask all the Leos that come on the show the same question all the time, and I'll ask you the question, what made you get into law enforcement?
Honestly, because my first dream didn't work out. Always planned on playing Major League Baseball my whole life, and I thought there was no other path for me, and I just knew it was going to happen. And then I got into junior college, and halfway through my sophomore year, I realized that probably wasn't in the cards, and I met an Air Force recruiter, took the ASVAB, and scored really high in the test geared towards law enforcement. So I enlisted and served 4 years as a law enforcement specialist and then switched right over to the civilian world.
That's awesome. And you served, and thank you for your service, Jared, to the Air Force. And you retired. We were having this discussion offline before we went live. I was like, well, I retired in March. And you were like, well, I beat you. I retired in December. Now, what made you, I mean, you don't have to get too personal, but what made you get out of law enforcement? I'll tell you the reason I did.
No, I'll get real personal. I'll be honest with you. I saw too many people that I respected and loved during my career leave bitter and disillusioned about what it really meant. And I didn't want to stick around and get to that point.
And that was the same with me. We talked a little bit again. I mean, it is such an honorable profession, and you know the brave men and women who do it every day. But I agree with you. You know, it does. It's an inherently toxic environment. You know that, Jared.
Yeah, you get paid all day to go around and look for what's wrong in society, right? Mm-hmm. You're seeing the bad in everything, and we got to get better at balancing it out. And that's one of the things I wanted to do was make this leap now when I'm young and I have a lot of energy and I can still really impact the career field. I'm not walking away from law enforcement. I truly believe I'm just beginning the impact I'm going to create in our field.
Mm-hmm. And you're doing so many great things outside of law enforcement. You're you know, toes still in the water, but I want to talk about that in a minute. But, you know, what you were just saying, you know, you're exactly right. I mean, I don't know why, you know, you have to have a balance. And one of the things I used to tell officers, if they asked my opinion, is like, dude, you have to get friends outside of law enforcement. And again, that's not a knock on law enforcement, but that's what helped me tremendously, Jared, is having friends outside of law enforcement that,
you know, and again, I get it, you know, you want to talk shop and stuff like that, but it really benefited me, you know, to not talk police work all the time.
Yeah, and I agree, but it's one of those dichotomies. As a young officer, we tell you, hey, balance out life, have your old friends, stay connected, but hey, there's overtime this weekend and we need somebody to work, and hey, there's a parade next Saturday and we need another guy to work, right? I mean, we tell them that, but then sometimes our practices, we really put a lot on their plates young because they're not going to say no. They're so excited about the career field. They're excited about the job. They want to be there every day. And we don't balance that out for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And but the one thing I saw, you know, when I was still in was, you know, when you and I got in law enforcement, you know, overtime was, I mean, and I don't know how it was in your prior agency, but I can tell you in my agency that I retired from, I mean, the younger officers, the millennials, they weren't flocking to the overtime anymore. Some of them were, but they had this mindset, again, at least in my organization, you know, they don't want to live to work. They want to work to live, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right. That's a shift with the millennials, mm-hmm. but we're at the tail end of that. Sure. I think our careers were much more spent towards, hey, they need somebody to work. I better work again. Like, you felt almost an obligation to continue to show up, even when you knew you needed a break.
Yeah. What do you believe some of the challenges? I mean, there's so many challenges out there. And I ask guests about this all the time, especially Leos. What do you think some of the biggest challenges law enforcement are facing, or what they're going to face in the future?
I think one of the biggest challenges is staying true to our roots and true to the standards, as maybe numbers of recruits decline right now. There's not as many people interested because of the social climate. The economy is good and they can make more money doing other things. There's a tendency to drop standards and chase numbers, which in the long run always hurt us. And we've seen it time and time again. Yet I see agencies all over the country dropping some standards that are crucial to making sure the people we bring in are trustworthy of the community.
Yeah, I agree with you. And you know, when you and I were getting in, I mean, I remember, you know, testing for agencies, and you know, there'd be hundreds and hundreds of people there for like a couple of positions. Now, we still do, you know, pretty good in my former agency, but again, it's not the numbers that we used to see. I imagine it's probably the same for you.
No, I 100% agree. The numbers are down, but it's a cycle. You know, if the economy takes a step back, like they're saying it will, our numbers will go up because people want the security, they want the pensions, they want the benefits. So we got to ride that out and really stay true. I would say the other big thing is, as we move to more of a profession, we got to pay professional wages.
That's a good point. That's a really good point. And my agency was pretty good, but I agree with you. We need to because my agency went to a 4-year degree, and I used to tell the chief and the deputy chief, if you want to go that route, then people are going to be expected to be paid more, right?
Absolutely. You got to be competitive in the marketplace. And I love college requirements for officers. I think that should be a standard. I think it just helps with critical decision making and just being an openness to hear others' opinions. But you're absolutely right. If we're going to require that, we got to pay the same as the other fields that pay require that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I remember years ago, because I worked for a couple agencies, and I remember I got my first job, I was getting paid like 13 or 14 bucks an hour. You know, I thought I was, my God, I'm getting paid a lot of money.
Right. No, absolutely. And I think at least what we're seeing in Colorado with the housing market boom and people really wanting to live here is
so expensive.
Cops can't afford to live in the communities, at least up north. You know, they're having to drive an hour to get into town to police. And it's just a different level of policing if you're not part of that community.
Yeah, exactly right. And I'm blessed to live and you know, used to work in the same community, Louisville, but it's Boulder County, dude. And it is ridiculous. Expensive.
Yeah, and that's I think that's huge. As we move, as you look around the nation, they're wanting more community involvement. The coffees with the chiefs, the Santa cops, all the stuff we do, community outreach is great, but if we really want to maximize it, having the officers live in those communities, shop at the same stores, kids go to the same schools, I think that is really what they want from us.
Exactly right. Let's switch gears a little bit, and I want you to talk about the great work you're doing. You're still educating many, many people with what you're doing. TeamHardy.net is the website. Did you always have an entrepreneurial bug in you?
Yeah, actually, it's funny you mention that, because I organized a busboy walkout when I was 15 years old.
Hell no, we won't do it anymore.
No, she had promised us we were going to get a raise, and she wouldn't do it. So Sundays was a huge brunch in the Washington, D.C. metro area. We had a bunch of like five-star generals that came to this restaurant, and about 10:30, I started letting the plates back up, and I got my buddies awesome. In the car and told her we'd be at my house and call us back when she wanted to give us. I think it was probably like a 25-cent an hour raise or something, but I was adamant we were getting it. So
what was
about 2 hours? It came back, got a raise.
Oh my God. So how old were you when you, did that?
I was 15 and a half, maybe 16. Cause I drove. So it was like my first job. I was a bus boy at officers club at Andrews Air Force Base.
That is awesome. And you rallied the troops behind you and you're like, we ain't doing it.
You should have seen how scared they were. Like, we're going to get fired. I was like, no, trust me. They need us. We can do this. If we'd have got fired, I don't know what I was going to do, but it worked out.
That's awesome. So talk about, Team Hardy, what are you doing?
So I got a couple things. I have a ground tactics coaches course that I run around the nation, and that came out of a need to address an area many officers fear, which is getting taken to the ground and not being able to fight their way back, getting their gun taken while they're on the ground. So I wanted to go to the highest fear area for many officers and give them skills and confidence. And then I believe that confidence, if you're confident in the worst case scenario, confidence carries over to the lesser scenarios. And I'm big on coaching. And one of the things I really like to preface is kind of the hierarchy of what I call information delivery. And I do this on the first day of my classes. And I talk about what is an instructor. And I have the students kind of feedback to me, and they'll tell you, you know, they teach the nuts and bolts and things and their outlines, and they're focused on getting through the material. And I agree. And not many people think of instructors as an inspiration, right? You don't have that one instructor like, oh, I was instructed by this guy 20 years ago and I'll never forget him. So then I go, okay, what's a teacher, right? You got an instructor and you got a teacher. And a teacher teaches the nuts and bolts, but then they also add some of the why thinking, some of the critical decision making. And there's more of a connection with a teacher, but the teacher still provides you the information. Then you go out and you do the information. There may not be follow-up. And then I get to coaches. And this is really where I think we're going to impact law enforcement, make a big difference, is coaching. Mm-hmm. And here's why I say that. Coaches deliver the nuts and bolts. They deliver the why, the critical thinking. But they also have that spirit, and there's a connection with students because there's a relationship. If you think in sports, coaches have long careers or get fired quickly based on the outcome of the team. Mm-hmm. And that's what I really want the guys and gals in my classes to remember, is you are judged on how the officers perform these skills when they need them most on the street. Mm-hmm. So if we know we're being judged on their wins and losses, how much more energy do we give them? How much more thought do we give them? How much more positive feedback and confidence building do we give them, knowing that our outcome is based on their outcome?
Mm-hmm. I love it. And we always need coaches. I mean, nobody knows everything, obviously. And you know, we always need people like you to keep us going with coaching, and especially with something that's so critical, like you said, with like defensive tactics and things like that. I mean, those are perishable skills, right, Jared?
Absolutely, they're perishable. But I'd ask you this, Patrick. Think back over your career and how many times you were trained in a use of force or defensive tactics or maybe even firearms, where the overwhelming message you left that class with was failure, lack of confidence, you lost in the scenarios, you got killed by the little guy changing the tire because you thought you were helping him and he actually had a gun hidden in the wheel well, right? Mm-hmm. Stuff like that. That eats at the very confidence we're supposed to be building in those sessions.
Yeah. Yeah. And you have this incredible discipline that you pass on to your students and the people that you're training, because you have a mixed martial arts background, right? And like we were talking about, you're a college athlete. Of course, you were a law enforcement officer for many years. So you have that discipline that you want to pass on.
Well, and I actually, that was a the parlay into why I thought, okay, I can make a business out of this and really have a great impact is I started thinking over the course of my career, I couldn't name the people whose classes I attended. I couldn't name who instructed me, but I could still remember my high school baseball coach. I could remember my mixed martial arts coach because they were invested in me.
Yeah, that's a great point. They were, and yeah, they made such an impact on your life.
You and here's a great example for you, Patrick, and I hope the audience can relate to this one. I was down at a regional academy just doing an observation on our recruits that were there, and I met a young lady from another agency, and she was paired up with our recruits a lot, but I didn't see a lot of confidence in her. I could just see they were doing defensive tactics. I was watching, and I just didn't see that she believed she could win with these skills. So I went over and talked to her for a few minutes and made a couple little adjustments that I knew would help her, and I didn't see her again for a couple years. And then she applied with our agency. We were able to recruit her in and get her switched over. I did her background. I ran her academy class. And then she got out on the street. Well, 2 years later, she's driving to a call. And one of our neighboring agencies is out on a call. She's driving by. She looks over and sees the officer running backwards and a guy with a knife chasing him. She pulls over, immediately jumps out, draws down, engages the suspect. And has a positive outcome as much as officer-involved shootings can be. And about 6-8 hours later, in the middle of the morning, she sends me a text message. And I'll never forget this because I was actually going to retire that year. And then I get this text message and it says, "Hey, Jared, I just wanted to thank you. I literally heard your voice coaching me step by step in my response."
That is awesome.
And here's the crazy thing, Patrick. Guess what I never taught her?
What?
I never taught her firearms.
Wow.
I never taught her driving. I taught her confidence.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I helped her believe in herself. And we did that on the mats. My skill area with her was defensive tactics, but that's what I'm saying. When you get people confident there and they start believing themselves, that carries over, and that's what we need more of in law enforcement. We need decision-making based on confidence, not on fear of incompetence or I've lost so much that I don't want this kind of call.
And you made a good point, you know, Jared. Why don't you think we're spending, because it is so important. They do it in the military, at least where I was at. They instilled confidence in you. Why aren't we doing this more in law enforcement?
I think, honestly, it's harder.
Just to instill confidence? To say, hey, you guys, you can do this?
Yeah. Because it requires a relationship. I have to get to know you, and I have to know what your strengths are and your weaknesses. And here's where I think we drop the ball sometimes, Patrick. We're extremely dishonest with each other. Not in a "I'm going to steal your stuff" way, but in our communication. "Hey, Patrick, I know you don't really like defensive tactics. You know, you only come to this training when you have to once a year, and your skills are a little behind par, so I want to give you some extra work." We don't say that.
Yeah, good point.
Right, we let you get through because we're instructing, so you get through the lesson plan. I can check off that you attended, so our liability is covered, but I've never actually invested in the outcome of can you do this when it matters most.
That's so important, yes. Great.
And that's why we're going to be making a great impact is we're developing coaches, and I can coach you in those 2 hours or I can instruct you in 2 hours. The difference is how much of myself I want to invest in learning about you and giving to you, and that's what I want to push.
Well, and that's why these people that you have coached over the years are that's got to make you feel amazing when somebody reaches out to you and say, "You know what, Jared, I remembered what you were telling me." I mean, that's got to make you feel just amazing.
It still brings chills to my arms and tears in my eyes when I recite it now, and it's been 2 years.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, so what do you do with that? Well, for me, I pay it back, and she comes to any class she wants free, and I tell her story all the time, and I want to empower her to have a career after this career with the confidence she's developed.
Yeah, that's so good.
But it's not that hard. And I think sometimes, Patrick, we make excuses because we don't have enough training time. I only got 2 hours. We got so much other stuff to teach. We make excuses and let ourselves off the hook of delivering the information. One of the things I always stress to people is when you have an opportunity to coach somebody, you have an obligation to make them better. Mm-hmm. Their family at home, their wife, their husband, their mom, their dad, their kids trust you to be making them better. That's what they think you're doing. So don't let them down.
Yeah. And it all begins with trust. If people don't trust you, they're not going to come to you and ask for help or be coached. So Yeah, I mean, like you said, I mean, we need to be spending more time with this because this is the next generation of people that were. And I always looked at leadership when I was still in, you know, with my agency, Jared, is you know, I never felt threatened at people that I was coaching and mentoring because I knew that someday they were going to take my job. So many people that I came across, and I'm not perfect. I'm not trying to go down that route. I'm just saying that so many people feel threatened by that. You know what I mean? When you're trying to make people better below you.
Yeah, absolutely. That's not coaching, right? No. We all know we have an expiration date on this career. So why would we not make the next generation better than us? And why would we not share the experiences, good and bad, so that they don't have to go through it? And that is one of the things I'm passionate about doing as I've retired, is sharing. I want to give back so that the next generation officers is better equipped, better trained, and better prepared to handle all the things that this career is going to throw at them.
Mm-hmm. And what would you give for the listeners out there? Because I really do, and we were, again, having this discussion before we went live, is, you know, I think, at least in my experience and some of the officers I've talked to over the years, they feel like, well, they can't do anything besides, you know, police work. And I believe they can do anything they want. But what would you give, what advice would you give to that person out there in the criminal justice field, no matter what you're doing, who is, you know, wants to start that business or wants to coach like you? What advice would you give him or her to start going after what they want?
Yeah, first off, I'd say prepare, right? Mm-hmm. Like for me, I started my business in 2015. The gym I own has been there since 2010. So I started kind of putting the framework in place so that it wasn't a cold turkey switch. One day I'm an officer, and the next I'm a civilian.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to plan. And that's one of the things, is it's not the organization's obligation to prepare you for what's next in your life. You have to be a little more selfish and identify what is it you want to do. So I would say identify it, right? Plan, start making adjustments, and then realize police shows, police movies are always the number one things in the box office on TV every week. Why is that? People are interested in what we do. There's a story to be told. We all have unique skills that translate to small business, working in corporations, banks, insurance companies. You just got to identify what is it you like about this career and then start looking, okay, what markets in the civilian world can I apply these skills? For me, I loved coaching. I loved use of force and defensive tactics and the mindset and the physical fitness that all went with it. So it was a great parallel. I have a gym and I run classes. It's literally every day I go to work now, I do the exact same things I did as a policeman. I just get to do it for myself.
Yeah. And I think it's so important that you're surrounding yourself with the people that are like-minded and you know, that are other business owners, and you learn from them and you get advice from them and people that are like, yeah, do it, dude. I mean, come on, go after it. Instead of hanging out with people that are going to say, you know, Jared, you're crazy. It's never going to happen. You're going to fail, things like that. I really do believe that, again, you are who you hang out with.
Oh, absolutely. And I'll tell you, Patrick, honestly, when I was leaving, I actually had guys that I considered friends that would joke and be like, hey, we're betting that you're back within a year. This isn't going to work. And I looked at them. I was like, that's a sad thing. Like, you should be hoping it does work. Like, why are we not encouraging each other to take risks like this more often?
Yeah, well, because, well, you know, the reason, Jared, is if you succeed, which you obviously have, you're killing it. If people are like, God damn it, I wish I could do that. And, you know, that jealousy thing, because their own insecurities. You know what I mean?
Absolutely, yeah. And it parlays that in all kind of industries. We're not unique that way. But one of the things I love is the fact that now I get to share with everybody that follows me or wants to follow me that it's possible. I'm not uniquely qualified for any of this. I'm not overly educated in one particular. I just have a strong desire to do more with my life, and I've identified goals, and I'm not willing to work hard and take some risks for them.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, Patrick, if I could, one of the things I want our audience to listen to is, you see what I'm doing now. I do supervisory summits. I speak at conferences. I run classes. I was on the Chief of Police's podcast not too long ago sharing leadership deals or ideals, and I was never promoted.
Mm-hmm.
I was at the same rank at the end of my career that I came in with. And it wasn't because I couldn't get promoted. I didn't want to, because I loved the jobs I was doing. And I knew if I moved up the chain, my ability to teach and coach every line level person would be diminished, right? You have to work with your shift. And out of respect, I can't really mess with your shift because the chain of command keeps me in a line. So leadership is possible, and I would say almost more importantly, it's an obligation that we lead from every level of an organization.
Exactly. And there's a Robin Sharma, I don't know if you know who that is, but he's a great author, and he has got a book out there. It's a couple years old, but leadership has no title. So the premise behind the book is it doesn't matter if you're the chief, doesn't matter if you're the sergeant, corporal, whatever the structure was in your organization, everybody is a leader from top down. You don't have to have formal rank to be a leader.
No, and you signed up for it. I think we need to throw that onus back on our officers. Right? You signed up to lead. Mm-hmm. So lead. Yeah. Quit sitting back on the sidelines. Quit having a poor outlook on what we're doing. Like, if you're going to be here, let's lead. Let's lead our community. Let's lead ourselves, which means we know what we want to get out of this. We know where we're headed. And let's lead the people that are coming in behind us.
Mm-hmm. Talk about relational-based leadership just for a moment.
I appreciate it. It is the key foundation, right? People will work harder for you. They'll want to work more with you. They'll enjoy being at work if they know they're valued and they know they're important. And it's easy for us to lose sight of that in a structured chain of command career field like law enforcement. But what you're seeing, and the millennials are forcing this on us, right? Because they don't, like you said earlier, they don't live to work. They work to live. And they want to know what they do is important. So that relationship to me, and it kind of goes back to coaching, but now here I've kind of spun it as more a discussion group, and we do this for like FTO supervisors, people that I think are critical for this is your record staff, your dispatchers, corrections, those that don't normally get all the training our sworn folks on the street get, because they have stresses just like the street cops. Mm-hmm. They have teamwork issues. They need to know that what they're doing is important, and they need to know, like, okay, I need to have goals and I need to have purpose. And here's what I'll tell you is if I know Patrick does his job because, you know, it was a career path for his family, he's got three kids, he wants to provide this. If I know that about you, I'm much more tolerant of things you do that may annoy me or things, mistakes you may make. I'm more invested in you as a person because you're not just a number filling a spot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think too many times in our career, we get in such a hustle to the data, you know, right? Get onto a call, get off of a call, get to the next call as fast as you can, get this report in and out as fast as you can, that we forget behind all of the things we're tasked to do are real people with problems, emotions, highs, lows, families. And I think we can do a whole lot better at identifying that and coaching to the strengths within that when we build that trust, because that's what's going to come back to.
Yeah, I agree. And you mentioned it, Jared, that the FTOs are critical in any organization. I mean, everybody's critical, but the FTOs, it's so important to have the right FTOs in place that can teach this, you know, to that next generation of officers, because I've seen bad FTOs in those key critical roles and they just taint the person.
Absolutely. I would say not only the FTOs, but let's go all the way back to the beginning. Who's doing your recruiting and your backgrounds and your initial training? Because every contact they have with a recruit starts shaping how they view your organization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so true. What motivates Jared Hardy? What gets you out of bed in the morning, brother?
You know, honestly, that's a great question. And if I had a strength in life, Patrick, I would tell you this is, I have a ridiculous amount of self-belief. Like, I just believe I'm capable of doing a lot of good things, and I know why I do it. And I'll tell you is my mom had me when she was 17 years old, and she didn't give me up for adoption. She didn't have an abortion. She kept me. And I've been hypersensitive to this since I was a little kid. I know that decision changed the course of her life. Mm-hmm. The things she thought she'd be able to do, she had to sacrifice for me. Where we lived, how we lived. And I have felt a strong desire and an overwhelmingly sense of responsibility to make sure my life is of such impact and I maximize my true potential to the point she never regrets it.
Yeah. I love it, man. I love your energy. And I you know about you've heard of the law of attraction, right?
Absolutely. I 100% believe it. Act well, right? Like, be a good person. You're going to attract more good stuff.
Exactly. And it took me years to learn this, Jared, but I am like you, I'm a firm believer. And I just know, again, I don't live in a bubble and live in, you know, fairyland and think there's not going to be any problems. But I just know you know, that if I put my mind to certain things, if I visualize it, if I put it out to the universe, it's probably going to happen. You know, if you are negative and if you are pissed off all the time, guess what? That's what the universe is going to give you.
Absolutely.
And I love your attitude. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah, I appreciate it, brother. It's the truth. But I would add one more thing. If you want it and you start thinking it's possible and you believe it's possible and then you work hard towards it, the world will give it to you.
Yeah, agreed. You have to work for it. So you can't just sit back and wish. Yeah. Hope is not a strategy.
No, and that's why I'm here. You know, that's why I made the leap. And I looked at my wife and you know, I'm young for retired. Mm-hmm. And I told her, like, trust me, like, we can do this. We're going to have a whole different life here in the future. But I've got to make this leap now, because I know what's possible. And so here we are. And, you know, you and I, this podcast, our connection here is, I think, just a shining example of how that works.
Well, and I love it because you were like, you know, you were, and trust me, I was freaked out too when I retired. I was like, oh, man, I've been doing this for 23 years. But I it was also thrilling to me, you know, saying, okay, I'm jumping into, well, not the complete unknown. I have plans and stuff, but it's still a risk. And it's the same thing for you. It's like, honey, we're going to be okay. We're going to do this. And bam.
But absolutely. It's amazing. It's scary as hell. It's with you because, you know, you get to a certain career or place in your career where police work's almost easy, right? You know what to do. You go in, day out. You know, you take vacation. You still get paid the same. Now, all of a sudden, for me, if I don't work today, if I don't make relationships that matter, if I don't make connections to where people want me on their shows or they want to bring me to train or that I bring value to them, and it's not about money for me, but it obviously you need it to live. But I know that the impact we can make in our profession is just beginning for people like you and I and the rest of your guests, like Scott Savage. I love what he's doing because it takes people within the industry to change cops.
Yeah. And you have to, I mean, if you are, again, we were talking about this before, if you are unhappy, if you are bitter and you're tired of your job, no matter what it is, law enforcement, whatever, you have the power to make a change. You're only limited by your own mind. So if you want to do something, life is short, man. You don't get replays. You know that. Do something. In the reality of things, we're not here for a long period of time.
No, and I 100% agree. And how about the stat, Patrick, that more officers will kill themselves than are killed by bad guys every year. And it's been that way my whole career. And why is that? Right? Why is that? I think for a lot of times we don't talk about real stuff. We don't have coaches within our profession or help them make us better and pick us up when we're down and hold us accountable when we're letting ourselves slack and really challenging us to be our best self, right? Mm-hmm. To be the best officer we said we're going to be. And for me, that scared the hell out of me. I was not going to stick around and be one of those stats. I was going to get out, and then now I want to attack those stats. And in my classes, I think one of the best things I can offer is the fact people look at me as a tough guy, right? I got messed up ears. I fought mixed martial arts. They can see my videos and my fights. And then I come to class and I give them real skills that will win an encounter on the ground. But then I also talk to them about things like fear. And being thy brother's keeper and taking care of ourselves and being okay with not being okay. Traditionally, talks that come from like your psychologist, your counselors, to which it's easy for officers to put up their barriers and be like, you don't know what I'm talking about. You've never worked the street. You don't know. Well, here I'm telling you, I do know.
Yeah.
And the stats are not in our favor, and let's fix it.
I agree, brother. What's next for you, Jared? What's next for you? You got all this stuff going on, brother. What's next for Jared?
Honestly, I want to be the most impactful trainer in law enforcement. I don't want to be the biggest. I will never have the biggest classes because I keep my classes to 10 to 12 people because I want intimacy. I want to know how to coach you. And I want that relationship. And I'm going to make a difference. I guys like you are going to make a difference. And I think we're going to continue to shape the narrative in law enforcement instead of having it shape us.
Well, I feel... there's a book in your future, bud. I'm seeing a Jared book.
You know, I have a podcast now that's called On Purpose, and it is getting outside of law enforcement a little bit and just creating purposeful living, because I think being able to teach people to have courage to run towards gunfire and to run towards danger, that same courage applies in almost everybody else's life as you get them to run towards problems, run towards obstacles, having goals. So the podcast is probably something I'm super most proud of right now. I just love that interaction. And then I'm traveling the country, teaching classes to law enforcement organizations all over.
Yeah, brother. Well, if people want to reach out to you, Jared, and find you, what's the best way they can do that, sir?
The website, teamhardy.net, you mentioned. I'm big on social. I think that's where you and I connected mostly. Yep. I'm on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram. I am not afraid to be out loud. I'm not afraid to make mistakes. And I'm just telling you right now that 21 years of police work has only prepared me to make the impact I'm about to make now.
Well, you are making an impact, brother. And thank you so much for coming on the show. We appreciate it. Anything I can do for you, Jared, you have my contact information, brother. You let me know. And yeah, much success to you in the future.
Same to you. I'm a big fan. I love the guests you're having on and your format. And when you're up here visiting colleges, let's get together and have a cup of coffee.
I will do that, brother. You take care of yourself.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media at @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.